If you want to get the most out of your bait
and be proud about it,
you've come to the right podcast.
It's time for the latest tips, tricks, and news to make you a better baiter.
I'm Liam Williams.
And I'm bait mate Sean.
It's time for the Proud Baiters Podcast. Winwood H. Oliver is a proud baiter and author of the book Homo Work, a witty part autobiography, part confessional, described as equal parts Broadway musical treasure hunt, masturbation manifesto, pop culture extravaganza, coming out comedy of errors, anonymous sex fest, mystical mindbender, gay love story, dysfunctional family drama, queer culture chronicle, and high camp tour de force. All of that is to say that it's a fiercely funny and honest look back at Winwood's life that doesn't hold back. His book and his Twitter feed are full of bait positivity and acceptance, so I had to get Tim on the podcast to talk about the book and the topic itself. Winwood, welcome to the Proud Baiters Podcast.
I feel proud to be here. Thank you, Liam.
Excellent. So, as I mentioned in the intro, you have the book Homo Work out now. So let's start with that in terms of our chat today. What kind of prompted you, to write a memoir?
You know, I've always considered myself to be a writer because I've kept a journal all my life. That started in 1978 when I was 14 years old. My drama teacher required all his students to keep a daily journal. And I just continued that into adulthood. So every night before I go to sleep, I write the events of the day and my feelings and my worries and my thoughts and my horny fantasies. Yep. And so I've been doing that for, wow,
a lot of years.
45 years, let's say.
Yeah, fantastic.
So I have all these journals here. And I thought, well, I think it's time, now that I'm 60 or approaching 60, to read some of them. So I started reading my old diaries, and three revelations popped out to me. First being, I had forgotten parts of my own life, things that I was reading and thinking, I just do not remember that at all. So that was very affirming, like I was getting back some of my old life. I really was happy that I had documented those things. And then a second thing was, because I'm a worrier, from hindsight, I could see that, oh, I was so concerned about that. I was so overwhelmed with that and worried with that and coming to nothing. So all that worry was just pointless. So it gave me a huge sense of perspective. And then the last thing that I discovered is that I intended it, but my diaries were reading like novels. I was reading and I was like, oh, I can't wait to hear what happens next. Even though it was my own life. You know, I knew what happened next, but I was like, oh, well, what happened then after that? So I thought, maybe I have something here. So I started just focusing on, you know, some stories and writing those and see how they came together. And I really wanted to see how my two personalities, myself and my baiter doppelganger, Carlos Sanchez, that I use as my baiter name, how did those two personalities intersect? But then I came up with a problem, and that was, tell these stories as myself. That's too revealing, and I'm not ready for that. So I had to come up with a pseudonym, which is Winwood H. Oliver that I have.
Yep.
So I have three personalities. I have Winwood, I have my true self, and I have Carlos. Sounds very schizophrenic.
No, I understand. I'm finding at the moment that the more time I'm putting, so for those that don't know who've listened to the podcast, Liam Williams is not my real name. I'm finding, and I don't know if you're finding similar or if you found that through the process of writing the book, but the lines between my real self and my Liam Williams self are considerably more blurred than they were probably a couple of years ago.
Absolutely. I found it very liberating. It's not hiding. It's about freeing myself. So
yeah,
the writing, I was able to own my perversions, own my shortcomings, and own my traumas instead of them owning me.
Yeah, I've found similar the more I have been Liam Williams in interactions, the more I feel that my real self is a little bit more open about things, which when half of Liam Williams' goal is to be open and a proud beta, I think that's better for my real self to have that openness as well.
Yes, for me, it's been like a great do-over, but not in the sense of I had to change myself. It's just freeing myself.
Yep. Yep.
Before I became Windward and published my book, I don't think I could have had this conversation with you.
Yeah. Other people that I've interviewed on the podcast as well have said similar, that they have been able to get on Zoom and get on the podcast and talk about their baiting. But then quite a few have touched base with me a little bit later about how affirming that conversation has been and how that's kind of come into their real life outside of their, you know, Baitworld username or their Discord username or whatever they had been using when they were on the podcast. And I think that's a key part of what I'm trying to do with the podcast and what you're trying to do as well in writing this book, is to put it out there to affirm ourselves, but also to pass that affirmation on.
Absolutely.
So for those that haven't read the book, let's get into the nitty gritties of your beta life, I guess. How did masturbation become a part of Winwood's life?
It became a part of my life when I was 9 years old, and my best friend, Cy Cocker, who lived across the street from us, told me about his cousin, Cliff Baker, who had come to, he made yearly visits with his family. And during his last visit, had told my friend Cy that he was able to make sperm come out of his penis. And he pulled down his pants, pulled down his undies. And what Cy said, he just kind of wiggled his dick and sperm came out. And I was like, what are you talking about? I didn't know, but I went home that night, and in bed, I tried to do the same thing to myself and nothing really happened. A week later, I was sleeping over at Cy's house. He had two twin beds in his bedroom. I'm not really sure why, but he came into my bed and I said, hey, Cy, tell me about your cousin Cliff. What did he do again? And he said, well, let me show you. And he pulled down his pajama bottoms and started masturbating. And so I did the same thing, and we were masturbating together almost in sync until I came to this unprecedented explosion of feeling and warmth and tingling that scared the hell out of me. But yep, I was addicted, you know, from that point on.
I always find it really interesting, and I think the younger someone starts, the more that this is the case. I always find it really interesting that first orgasm can be so frightening for someone, because it is such an intense pleasure. But even though it is pleasurable, I think such a hit of sudden intensity is the thing that is shocking in that first instance.
Yes, shocking and scary, because this is 1973, Liam. So there is no porn. That, you know, I'm the I'm the oldest child in my family, so I don't have older brothers or sisters to tell me anything. So, you know, all I had heard was that, you know, if you masturbate, which I didn't really even know what that meant, you would either go blind and or hair would sprout on your palms. So that's the first thing that I looked for after I had my first orgasm. I was startled and pleased that I could still see. No hair was on my palms. Yep. And so I thought, okay, this is okay. So Sai and I started doing that regularly, daily. And then our penises swelled to twice their size, almost simultaneously. And it scared the hell out of us. As I say in the book, scared the stroke out of us.
Yeah.
And so it must have just been inflammation, but I didn't know. I didn't know, should I tell my mother? I was scared to death, but this puffing finally subsided, and then we were back at it, and then that's what we called masturbation. We called it Puff, or Puff the Magic Dragon, and that was our boyhood baiting session.
Yep, great. So you talk quite a lot in the book about the addiction from the start and your certainly young life as a compulsive beta. Was it compulsive from the start, or did that develop as you got kind of further and deeper into it all?
Well, I never thought of it as a compulsion in those days. I mean, it was always on my mind. I was always doing it. I was always looking at, you know, guys my age. But I think as I got deeper into the beta community and I learned the word beta, which I have to tell you, when I first heard the word beta, I thought it was the most ridiculous juvenile term I ever heard. I wanted nothing to it. It's I used the word jacking off. That's kind of, you know, what I grew up with.
Yep.
But then when I found that community and, you know, heard people calling themselves chronic compulsive masturbators, that's when I realized and maybe even sunk further into the bait hole because of it.
Yeah. Was there, can you kind of remember a point where it became a more conscious decision that you wanted to spend more time baiting? Because I know for myself early on, it was just like, I've got 2 minutes, I'm going to do it. And that, you know, was as many times a day as I possibly could. But as I got into my later teens and I guess into my 20s, it turned kind of into more what it is now. It's like I am looking for opportunities and in some ways planning a time when I can get a bait session in. So do you remember any kind of turning point when it became more of a conscious, I'm going to consciously spend my time masturbating?
I think it became more like that and more what now we classify as edging, which I didn't even know that term until a few years ago, when phone sex started being available. I guess in the early 80s, which was in the States, it was the 976 numbers, which they would charge to your phone per minute.
Yep.
But they had some free lines, sample lines that maybe you could be on for 10 minutes for free. Of course, those lines were always busy. So it took you sometimes 20 minutes even to just get through.
Yep.
But then, you know, you could exchange numbers with somebody, and then it became more of not a solitary experience, but a longer, more edging, more bro bonding experience.
Yeah. And that's when it became a more deliberate thing, in that you were, I guess, timing and scheduling that opportunity that you had and you were able to get on the phone.
Oh, honey, no. For me, it's never about timing or scheduling. It's about that takes precedence and I'm late to work or I'm late to go to this family. So, So yes, any free time was spent during that. But even when I technically didn't have free time, I was baiting.
Yeah, I think that's a common thing. I know I've talked about it a lot on the podcast, and I've got another kind of blog and episode coming up about time management soon. So I definitely think that's a common thing, being late or that prioritization of time. Do you still...
Can I interrupt? It's part of the thrill and the badness of it all and the abandon. So it actually, you know, it's like sneaking around to have sex. That's always more exciting than if you've been married for 30 years and you can have sex whenever you want.
Yeah. 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 There is that. I am choosing to do this instead of, and this pleasure is such a big part of my life that I am putting other things on hold, other important things on hold to be able to do it.
Right.
Do you still consider yourself a compulsive masturbator these 45 years later?
Oh, yes. I am a chronic compulsive popper baiter. And over the years, it's only gotten worse, which I consider is better.
Yep. Yeah.
So I have a lot of baiting hours under my belt. So this is not out of conceit. This is just out of experience. I consider myself a master baiter and a popper pro. I would be hard pressed to find somebody else who knows more about masturbation and popper baiting than me.
Well, there's a challenge for anybody that's listening who thinks they might. You can get in touch with myself or get in touch with Winwood on his Twitter and compare notes and see who wins. I certainly am not claiming that I know too much about the popper baiting. Poppers are not my thing. I don't react well to them. So I can't challenge you on that one. And you've also got a number of years more and a number of hours more experience than me. So I won't challenge you on that knowledge either, but I'm learning and I'm practicing as often as I can.
Yes. And it is not a competition. And I say that in jest.
But yes.
Yeah. But that being said, I am not a baiter who uses poppers. I am not one of those baiters who call themselves a popper baiter and they just are content with one or two sniffs. That to me is not a popper baiter. You are a baiter who uses poppers. You are not a popper baiter. Poppers are central to my baiting experience.
Okay.
I also consider myself an edger and a gooner, but I'm not a performative gooner. I'm an organic gooner. So you won't see me sticking out my tongue or crossing my eyes or drooling, because unless you're on some heavy drugs, that's not really authentic to me. Gooning to me is much more of a verbal thing, a repetitive thing, a complete abandon thing.
Yeah, I find all of those differences fascinating. And I think finding that line of being prescriptive, I guess, with terms or actions is a tough one to walk. I've spoken to a lot of gooners who do the tongue out and the eyes thing. And while, yeah, it is performative in a sense, I think it's also something that adds to their feeling of their gooning session, if that makes sense. Adding those actions. I think I was listening to a podcast. Actually, it was the Beastly Betas podcast, and he was talking about how they wanted to include more nipple play in their bait and get more pleasure, and so they just would play with their nipples until, I guess, that wired them to associate baiting with nipple play. And I think for some gooners, that put those performative actions do that similar kind of enhancement but there's still the broadness under the Guna term. So you can be a Guna without doing that.
Oh, absolutely. And my nipples are hardwired, so I am definitely a nipple baiter also.
Yep.
So I can relate to that. And I will say that I've spoken to several baiters who considered themselves Gooners and called themselves Gooners, and of their own accord, after having a few sessions with me, said, "Oh, I don't think I was a Gooner before. Now I really understand what Gooning is." And again, it's not putting a value judgment. Do whatever turns you on and makes you feel great. But for me, that sticking out of the tongue and crossing the eyes and drooling, it doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, and so that's not a part of a Gooning for you. And I think I have had multi-hour edging sessions, which a couple of my online bait buddies have, you know, told me should be Gooning sessions, but I don't feel like I've achieved a Gooning state. It's just a really long edge, and I think that's a distinction as well.
But you enjoyed it.
Yeah, and that's the kind of session that I enjoy, and that's the kind of session that I have regularly. I have tried some tactics to get into the Gooning thing, but I still feel like I haven't achieved the depth of a Gooning state that a lot of people talk about. But the way that I bait also still requires a little bit of connection with the real world, if that makes sense.
Yes, and that's your style, and that should be respected. And if you want to get deeper into Gooning, you will. And if you don't, that's perfectly fine.
Yep. So back to the book a little bit. One of the things I like about how you've written the book is it's not a baiting memoir. It's not a memoir that shies away from anything to do with sex or masturbation, and that the topic of masturbation is kind of sprinkled throughout the novel rather than just be like, oh, this, you know, part two is about Winwood the beta. Was that a conscious decision as you were writing the book to sprinkle it throughout? Because that's how it is in our, you know, daily lives. We do normal stuff and then we bait as well. So was that a conscious decision to spread it out rather than to just chunk a whole lot of beta stuff in there?
Yes, and I think you described it perfectly. So for me, it wasn't so much intentional as it was natural. I wrote the way I converse. One reader told me that I just felt like I was sitting at your kitchen table and you were just telling me stories. You know, a lot of people dislike memoir because it's either sanitized because they're making themselves out to look better than they are, or it's just very linear. Well, I was born here, and then in grade school, I did that, you know, and it just goes in a chronological order.
Yep.
My book is not chronological. It's stream of consciousness, or as I call it, scream of consciousness.
I think that distinction is really interesting. I've started teaching a bit of a writing class this year, and we're in a topic at the moment centered around autobiography and memoir. And I find that distinction between autobiography in that chronological linear sense and memoir to be really interesting. And I've realized that I much prefer memoir. I've got a couple of half-read autobiographies of famous people on my bedside table. And one of them is half-read because it's just like, you know, 1991 was this, 1992 was this. The other that are more finished, is the one that is like, here's me talking about acting. Here's me talking about a different theme. And it jumps around to talk about those themes. And that's something that I think you've done really well. And I think that's got a lot of appeal for people in terms of connecting with you as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's just, I think it because you touched on it. I'd rather read a book that's more thematically shaped than event shaped. And believe me, it took a lot of craft and going back and changing things, because if I'm not telling my life story chronologically, then I've got to make sure that the reader's with me every step of the way, that when I skip ahead 10 years and then go back 15 years, that they know who the key players are in my life. And so that takes a lot of strategizing, but I think it has a better payoff.
Yeah, I certainly think it has. And from a beta sense, it does naturally fit in. The references to masturbation and the key events that you mention around masturbation naturally fit into the theme of whatever section of the book that you're in. I want to talk a little bit more. I think we've become a little bit more like a writing podcast in this episode. And I knew this was interviewing people that write about baiting. I knew I was going to be straddling a fence as a host of the Proud Baiters podcast and as an author. So sorry to any listeners who don't want to hear about the craft stuff, but I do want to hear about that. And I'm the host.
Can I interrupt the host for a moment?
Sure.
To continue what we were talking about?
Yeah.
That kind of melds the masturbation with the writing. So one of the reasons I wanted to include masturbation in my memoir is obviously because it's so integral to my life and who I am, but also because masturbation is a metaphor for self-love, which is one of the main themes of my book, my journey to accept myself and to get closer to loving myself.
Yeah, I think that's a key part of it. And I think it has the benefit of it being in there is it's almost, I don't want to say unavoidable, but I feel like if people want to read a memoir but don't want to talk about masturbation, they can just skip the chapter on masturbation. But it is an integral part of your life. And honestly, it's an integral part of everyone's. And I think having that mentioned in amongst everything else, you know, I'm going to school, I'm masturbating, you know, I'm changing this work, I'm masturbating. Like, it's all in there in life. And so it's all in there in the book as well.
Absolutely.
So talking of masturbation fitting into life, how broadly speaking would you say your attitude towards masturbation has changed over the years and, I guess, decades?
My attitude, see, I never had a problem with masturbation. If there was any shame in my life, that came from being gay, not from being a baiter.
Yeah.
I could hide my bait addiction. Now, as a boy, I naively would just wipe my sperm on the corner of my sheet. So I'm sure my mom had, I can't imagine that she wouldn't have known, yet there is no way I am ever going to approach that topic with her.
No.
So, but what I couldn't hide was my obvious sexuality. And believe me, I tried to hide it.
So do then you think the overall, I guess, societal attitude towards masturbation has changed significantly?
Well, I've given this a lot of thought, and especially since I was an educator for 30 years, I have a lot of experience with young adults over a good range of time. And it seems to me that kids today have no shame. Now, on one hand, that's a great thing, because all shame is inhibiting, corrosive, and burdensome. It can really ruin your life.
Yeah.
But the thing I'm seeing is that the youth of today, their shamelessness doesn't derive from self-confidence. it comes from being addicted to attention. So they're doing, showing, saying anything shamelessly just for a like or a follow or a share. Yeah. So it seems like they've traded their shamelessness, again, that in one way is a great thing, but they've traded it for perpetual inadequacy.
Always seeking more and more recognition.
And comparing themselves to other people all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I think as human beings, we always do that, but we would only do that with our small sphere of people that we interacted on a daily life. Probably, you know, the biggest would be at a school or at a college. And even then, you're only interacting with a handful of those people. Now, if you're on social media, you could be interacting with the whole wide world.
How do we, or you, I guess, think that has an effect on the masturbation side of shame, or the shame connection to masturbation? So you said you didn't feel shame, but a lot, and talking in, you know, our Proud Baiters social club, we have talked about shame a lot recently. Do you think there is considerably less shame around masturbation because of that openness?
I do, except I think this is also tied to the instant access, ever-present availability of hardcore and fetish porn that these kids grew up with.
Yeah.
And I think what that's done is it's inured them to intimacy. For a lot of them, I think intimacy is something that they just don't understand. I don't know if it's fearful for them, but it's something that they avoid, because I'm now noticing this phenomenon with young baiters who don't want to phone bait. They don't want to cam bait. All they want to do is sext. All they want to do is exchange sexy, baiterish, dirty messages back and forth. And I can enjoy that for a little while, but I can't bait and type at the same time. I'm not that nimble. So for me, at a certain point, that's going to become boring, and I'm going to want to hear your voice or see you. And some of them, they're absolutely not interested in that, and it blows my mind. I can't wrap my head around it.
I think there is almost a flip from people that I've spoken to. It used to be intimacy came first, and once you knew someone intimately, you could or would engage with them sexually. But I think they're, you know, the hardcore porn has no connection. And if it does between the participants, then that part is, you know, the story part at the start is skipped over. But so then I feel, and I've experienced this a lot with people that I hook up with, the hookup comes first, and then is an attempt to get to know someone. And I certainly feel with younger people that is something that they're less interested in because they can get the sex.
Right.
And yeah, I think it's an interesting time. Obviously the internet is changing things, and it is continuing to change things. And so I think it's an interesting time to kind of observe how people approach all manners of sexuality.
Yes. But what really developed, I think, how I developed into a baiter is because of phone sex and that bonding experience. So I prefer to bait with somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not a pornosexual. I like porn. Porn is okay to me, but I am not obsessed by porn. It's not an obsession of mine at all. But I know it is for a lot of people, and a lot of people that is their baiting relationship is just them and the screen.
Yeah, in that solo pornosexual sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's certainly, again, and that's, you know, different to different people. I don't watch a huge amount of porn. I do like having a connection with people, but I don't consider myself really a buddy beta. I'm in this kind of weird space in between solo sexual, porno sexual, and buddy baiting. And the more I talk to people about it, the more betas that I connect with, the more I think I feel a little bit in between all of it and have to work to kind of clarify what I'm looking for. So the book talks a lot about masturbation and a lot about life. And as you said at the start, you are very experienced and consider yourself quite knowledgeable and professional on the beta side of things. So before we go, what advice do you have for our proud betas listening?
My advice would be to stop looking over your shoulder. Don't worry about what other people are thinking about you. What one of the major themes of my book is non-judgment. So self-love and non-judgment, not judging yourself, not judging other people. So stop looking over your shoulder. Stop labeling yourself. Stop trying to find exactly what you, edger, gooner, solo sexual, porno sexual, asexual, aromantic, whatever it is. Stop labeling yourself. And also stop evangelizing, because yes, baiting has mystical, soulful, transformative aspects to it, but you don't need to convince anyone but yourself. I think it starts ringing false when I see baiters, usually on Twitter, where they're just constantly talking about their porn addiction or their locking their penis addiction, their caged addiction, or whatever it is. And I think, well, who are you trying to convince? Are you trying to convince yourself? Because I'll buy it, but I think you could just be with that a little bit more. I think seeking a true community that will broaden you instead of placing you in a box, seeking fellow baiters who empower and encourage you is a much better thing. Even if you have a submission and a humiliation kink, which are totally fine, and sometimes I can get into those things too, that it's still at its core a loving, accepting, broadening thing, not a limiting thing. That's why gooning is so great, because it's abandon, it's letting go, it's letting loose, and maybe cracking that cosmic egg and finding new aspects of yourself that you weren't aware of. So just be open to those things.
Yeah, I think, and considering what I just said before, I think that's really good advice. I am in this kind of battle of I'm going to do what I want to do and not seeking the label. But I think we are surrounded, particularly those that are seeking a beta community or even beta improvement, we're surrounded by terms and titles and categories that it makes it hard sometimes not to fall into that. But I like the idea of finding people that support, and that's what I'm trying to build with our little Proud Betas social club, people that just support the beta that you are and the beta that you want to be. And the more you can allow yourself to be that, then the better beta you'll be and the prouder beta you'll be.
Yes, I love that you call it the Proud Beta podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, I am really into the proud bit. The only thing I want to improve for people. And the main advice that I'm trying to give people is to be more proud and to become better, however that looks for you. So,
and can I just add one more thing?
Because
I have so much experience, people who label themselves, then when I talk to them, I'm like, no, you're not really a pauper baiter. And I'm not putting a judgment on that. I'm just thinking, like, why are you saying you're so into paupers when clearly they're not that big of a deal to you? Like, why are you labeling? Why are you feeling the need to label yourself something that you're not really that thing?
Yeah, it is a tough thing, and I think people fall into it really easily. And I think because there's been such a lack of acceptance around baiting for so long, I feel like those terms are a little bit of security in terms of that acceptance and that finding of community. But I think if we just look at the beta community broadly as people that are accepting and encouraging of solo sex, then that in itself is the security and inclusion that people are looking for without the need to categorize, define, or limit with labels.
Yes. And, you know, we haven't talked about this at all, but I've had plenty of sex with other people in my life. And there's a lot of sex and a lot of not anonymous sex in homo work. And so I guess I'm not really solo sexual. Well, one thing, because I've been married to my husband for 30 years and we still have sex. So maybe what one of my friends said, well, maybe you're solo flexible, which I thought was a really great term. So again, it's
but there also may not need to be a term. Like I have a lot of sex, I have a lot of partnered sex, and I have a lot of solo sex. Both of those make up big parts of my sex life, and I'm proud of both of those parts of my sex life. And so I can't label myself a solo sexual, and I can't label myself whatever the partnered sex version of solo sexual is.
Yes.
Because I do both and I enjoy both and I accept both. Like, and I said to people recently that, you know, tonight after I finish this interview, I'm going out to the pub for karaoke and I'll potentially pick up someone there. But if I don't, I'm equally as happy to come home and spend an hour with myself as I am to spend an hour with anybody else. And I don't know if there's a term out there for someone like me that is equally happy at both. But I, like we're saying, I don't think there needs to be.
I don't think there needs to be. And then, you know, you can add there's all shades of gray, because I have never been a big fan of penetration. Yes. Penetrative sex. What? Yes. I don't consider myself a top or a bottom. I'm more of a side. I'm much more of an oral sex person. So some people who might meet me in a bar and think, oh, we're hooking up. Are you a top or a bottom? I'm kind of neither.
Yeah.
So there's all these shades of gray.
Yeah. And I think the more we embrace that as a community and the more that we embrace that within ourselves, I think the prouder we can be and the more accepting we will be able to be of ourselves and our sexuality.
And able to do things that we thought, you know, we weren't interested in, but because we had so much support from our community and because we were open to it, that we might develop into something that previously we thought we weren't interested in. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, I do think so. I think also, Winwood, that there is a lot more that we could talk about. So we may need to get you back on the podcast a little bit further down the track. But for now, would you like to tell people a little bit, do a little plug for Homo Work and tell people, I'll put a link in the show notes for people to get to the book, but do you want to give a little plug for Homo Work as we finish off?
Well, Homo Work is my life story. I have the tagline, come for the smut, stay for the stories. It is not, I don't consider it erotica, especially because I always find the humor in everything. So there's even in the wildest, nastiest parts of Homo Work in my life, I can be very tongue in cheek and very, very campy and also self-deprecating. I think it's a positive thing to be able to laugh at ourselves.
Yep.
So I would love for people to read it. I think you're in for a wild ride and you might just discover some things about yourself by reading it.
Fantastic. Yeah. Like I said, there will be a link in the show notes for the book. And also a chapter of the book is going to feature on my Gay Erotica podcast feed. So if you haven't subscribed to that and you want to hear some of the book on the podcast feed, then you can head over there and do that. But yeah, there'll be a link for Homo Work in the episode description, as well as a link to where you can find Winwood online. Winwood H. Oliver, thank you very much for joining me on the Proud Baiters podcast.
Thank you, Liam. It was an absolute pleasure, and I really admire everything you're doing. It's coming from a beautiful place in your heart. So thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Proud Baiters podcast. I'm Liam Williams.
And I'm Baitmate Sean.
Keep up to date with the chat on the Proud Baiters Discord.
And if you want early access to every episode and a whole heap of extras, sign up to the Liam Williams Patreon.
Until next time,
happy baiting.